I hope that's working. Right, somebody has got Psalm 40, verses 1 to 2. Debbie, go on, read it in your lovely strong voice.
I waited patiently for the Lord. He turned to me and heard my cry. He lifted me out of the slimy pit, out of the mud and mire. He set my feet on a rock.
Picture helps us understand this passage. The forces were gathering around him, the armies that were trying to pursue him and kill him. He felt vulnerable, felt weak. God is there, if we look to, but call out to him in our times of need. And not just when we feel under threat as David did, but when we're in that slimy pit, when we're doing things we didn't ought to do, or just taking our eyes off God. Focusing on what the world and the enemy would choose to distract us with. We're getting sucked down. And it's at that first point when we're crying out to God that he kneels down to reach into that trough, that slimy pit, that place of weakness, vulnerability, to pick us up and set us firmly on the rock that is him, the rock that is his truth, his word. All the blessings that flow from a relationship with Father God. The hope, the assurance, the strength that comes. We're not going to spend a lot of time looking at the New Testament, but there's a passage. Somebody's got 2 Corinthians.
Jesus said to me, my grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. Therefore I will boast all the more gladly about my weaknesses. So Christ's power rests on me. That is why, for Christ's sake, I delight in weakness, in insults, in hardships, in persecutions, in difficulties. For when I am weak, then I am strong.
Now David, when he was writing this, obviously knew nothing about what. So while it's great to read passages like Psalm 61, as David wrote it to the audience, he wrote it. We learn so much from it. We learn so much more today by reading it with the knowledge and the understanding we gain from Jesus' life, all that he did, all that he said, and all of those who were close to him, all that they said. As we read it through the lens of Jesus, we see so much more. So Paul, writing to the Corinthians in that passage that John just read, reminds us in our weakness, when we're with Jesus, when we're with God, we are strong. Not strong in ourselves, nothing I'm doing. I don't go to the gym, as you can tell. But nothing I'm doing about my own strength, either physically or mentally or emotionally or spiritually. All down to God. His Spirit working in me. Jesus, all that he's done and doing for us. That's where my strength comes. I find it really hard. I find that bit that John just read out, I find it really hard to do as Paul said. I delight, remember that word, I delight in weakness, in insults, in hardships, in persecutions, in difficulties. I know Scripture tells us, rejoice, I say again, rejoice. But when I'm in those difficult spots, it's hard to remember to rejoice. But we are so blessed when we do. So blessed. For you have been my refuge, a strong tower against the foe. I long to dwell in your tent forever and take refuge in the shelter of your roof. There's so much we could say about this. We need to remember when we're in a situation similar to David, we need to look to God, to the Lord, for him to be our strong tower. If you've ever experienced real difficult times, your friends and your family hopefully will gather around you and will be giving you lots and lots of advice. And it's so easy to be drawn into that good advice, that well-meaning advice. Or what the agony aunt says, or what the person on the TV says. Be only looking in one place. We need to be looking to that rock, to God. It's He who will. Yes, as David said, I long to dwell in your tent forever. I look around the room, I thought most of you have given up your days of camping. I know I have. We've graduated to a caravan. It's got a fixed double bed and proper central heating in it. But David's obviously not talking about camping. A long way from Jerusalem, a long way from where the Lord is at. He wants to come into his presence, to take refuge with God, his God, our God, in the shelter of the Lord. And if we look at that, 2 or 3 weeks ago, that mother hen picture of God arms up, wings outstretched, gathering. And hold that count of a farm fire. Although the hen had died, had sacrificed her life, she gathered her chicks under her wings. And when the farmer picked up the dead hen, the chicks were still alive. That's such a beautiful picture of Jesus and the sacrifice. David didn't know that he knew Jesus. He longed to be in that place to secure it. Who's got Psalm 27? Go for it, Ron.
In the day of trouble, we see the same in his world. The Lord hides him in the shelter of his
tent. Set me high. Didn't we just see your goodness and your love and kindness follow me? spent every minute of the day watching over them, even when they're asleep. And doesn't God just love to do that? He's watching over. Though we were young children. Using that same picture image of David, Psalm 51, hide me within the shelter of your embrace and in your hand. Such a lovely place. Psalm 51 wasn't the only passage. Listen to me, you who chase after righteousness, you who passionately pursue the Lord. Look back to Abraham, the rock from which you have come, to Sarah, the quarry from which you were dug. Remember what I did for them. Yes, look to Abraham, your father, and to Sarah who bore you. For when I called Abraham, he was but one person. But I blessed him greatly, so that one became many. Indeed, Yahweh will comfort Zion, restore her, and comfort all her broken places. He will transform her wilderness into the garden of bliss, her desert into the garden of Yahweh. Joy and laughter will fill the air with thanksgiving and joyous melody. Listen to me, my people. Pay attention to me, my nation. For I release my teachings to the nation, and I will call the light of justice to rest on them. Right now, my righteousness closer, and my salvation is gone. Listen to me. God speaking to his people. We need to pay attention. We need to hear what he's saying. We need to read and take in what it says and respond to this. You chase after right living and the passion of the Lord. Speaking directly to us today, we gather.
Look. Genealogy.
Luke and Matthew of Jesus, there are differences because they focus on different parts and different lineages. But one is similar. One is a consistent. Is Abraham. Now, of course, in my first time, they didn't have a genealogy either. Unless they would easily look back to Abraham. The rock from which you have come, which God.
Like the sands of the desert and the stars in the sky, descendants numerous to count.
Yes, look.
Your Abraham, your father, who bore you, for when I called Abraham, he was one person. but I blessed him greatly, so that one became many. I blessed him. God continued to bless. God blessed him abundantly. Abundantly. Today. Indeed, Yahweh will comfort Zion, restore her, comfort all her broken places, transform the wilderness into the garden of bliss, and a desert into the garden of Yahweh. You know, it made me think of that picture that Heather had of the desert. That wilderness. But God uses our times in the wilderness, just as he did for Moses and the people as they tramped around for all those years. He teaches us, he molds us and shapes us and blesses us even when we still feel we're in time of wilderness. He will transform. You've only got to open up a newspaper or switch on the TV, or, you know, if you're like me, go on your computer or whatever and read the news, and around us feels like a wilderness at times, a battleground at times. It's not the Garden of Eden that God first designed, first planned for us to inherit, become a battleground, especially places like the Ukraine. You've got all the environmental disruption going on. You've got all the pain and suffering, the cost of living crisis. You know, you see COVID disappearing, and they're already talking about monkeypox or what. Well, you know, just stop it. Stop it. God will transform all of this. Listen to me for the second time. Pay attention. Me, my nation, my people, all the people. For I release my teachings to the nations. Isaiah's book is rich in teaching. And in so many places, it speaks of Jesus. Foreshadowing. Who did God send ultimately to teach them? What was one of the titles of Jesus? Teacher. Teacher. I will teach the nations, and I will cause the light of justice. Who was the ultimate light? Who is the ultimate light? Isaiah didn't know him, but he speaks of him, of justice to rest on them. My righteousness is coming closer, and my salvation. He's sending it out. He's already talking of sending his salvation out through Jesus. We catch a glimpse of what is to come. little but rest on our rock. You didn't know I was going to play that, did you?
But the people were thirsty for water.
They going round on their and they grumbled against Moses and they said, "Why did you bring us out of Egypt to make us and our children livestock die?" You know, they'd already forgotten all that God through Moses had done, all those plagues to turn Pharaoh's heart, to free them from slavery, from captivity, from punishment, from a grueling life. And as they left and approached the barrier of the Red Sea, Moses put in his staff as God directed him to, and the waters were held back and they crossed. They'd already forgotten. They'd crossed on that dry ground, reached the other side, and as Pharaoh's troops were bearing down on them, the waters came back and swamped the army. They'd forgotten all that. Then Moses cried out to the Lord, "What am I to do with these people? They're almost ready to stone me." The Lord answered Moses, "Go out in front of the people. Take with you some of the elders of Israel and take in your hand the staff with which you struck the Nile and go. I will stand before you by the rock at Horeb. Strike the rock and water will come out of it for the people to drink." So Moses did this in the sight of the elders of Israel. He struck that rock. And met the practical needs of the people. God blessed them abundantly. That life-giving water flowed out of the rock. And again, we see a picture of Jesus, who described himself as the living water. And more on that next week, because it speaks of that specifically in the New Testament. I want to dwell on that next week. So later on in Exodus, when Moses is asking to come into the presence of the Lord and see his face, see his glory. And the Lord said, "There is a place near me where you may stand on a rock. And when my glory passes by, I will put you in a cleft in the rock and cover you with my hand until I pass by. Then I'll remove my hand and you will see my back, but my face must not be seen." You can stand securely, firmly on the rock that is God, on our faith in him. Our faith in his Son, Jesus Christ. You know, you can imagine William sitting there in that cleft, in that hollowed out bit of the rock. God putting him in and placing his hand right over him, as he did with Moses, to protect him, to guard him, a place of refuge, a place of love. So that Moses eventually could see the back of God as he passed. We've covered a lot of ground this morning. I hope we'll hang together next week. Just as a reminder, we looked at the desert, a place of wilderness, but also a place of revelation and transformation. So, sand from them. Don't say B&Q or the beach or the desert. Where do we get sand from?
From sandstone.
From rocks. That's where sand comes from. From ground down rocks. You know, you think of God, the rock. We come from him. I can ping this around. You don't copy it, but that sound, it speaks of multitudes, abundance and blessings. It's not just dry old stuff. And the rock, strength, refuge, securely solid and unchanging. And then in the earlier passage, salvation, light, justice, and giving water. There's some of the themes that we've looked at this morning just by following what God was saying. He was stirring up that image of himself as the rock and as we listen to it. So I you know, when I opened my concordance and my Bible, I was just blown away by the number of references to rock and desert. And I would just encourage you to spend a bit of time.